Day 64, still no sight of Nancy Guthrie. However, there are two new demand letters that just came into TMZ. We're going to get to that in a moment. As a daughter, Savannah Guthrie returns to her job on the Today Show, holding it together on air, then stepping outside and things kind of come apart a little bit. Savannah Guthrie had to fight through some emotion in front of the world. News reporting raising questions continuing to about the investigation into Nancy Guthrie's disappearance. Did investigators start this case looking in the entirely wrong direction? And right now, do they even have a suspect on their radar?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, more than 50 countries represented in the best community, not just on YouTube, but in all the world. This is the show bringing you the very best guests in true crime. And tonight, we're going to be reporting on the latest developments in the case of Nancy Guthrie, who, as I said, has now been missing for 64 days. And here to break it down, our all-star panel that has been with us on this case, starting off with the godfather of true crime, three-time Las Vegas Officer of the Year, retired homicide detective, retired undercover narcotics. He was at Tupac Shakur's autopsy. What else do you want to know? His name is Phil Ramos. Phil, thank you for being here. Next up, he's the commander. He is retired since early January. Pima County, retired SWAT commander, Bob Krieger. And next up, one of his retired colleagues as well. These guys are too young to be retired, but nevertheless, they are retired. He is wearing his Michigan Wolverines baseball hat, the NCAA Finals on tonight, around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I promise these guys will be off air by then. Kurt Dabb, retired homicide detective, Pima County. He had a Arizona shirt and then a Michigan hat, Michigan shirt, Arizona hat, but now it is just Michigan all the way. I got to tell you, I'm rooting for the UConn Huskies just to be a pain in everyone's ass. I'm from the East Coast and Hurley's from New Jersey, so got to root for them. And look at this. Love Phil and Bob. What about Kurt? What about Kurt? He'll be there. We'll see Kurt. So let's start off. We're getting some breaking news right out of the gates. And without further ado, let me just play it for you. A lot of people are shaking their heads. And here's one. Phil, Bob, and Kurt. Thank you guys for being here. Really grown to like my new friends in Pima County. And of course, Phil Ramos. But once again, TMZ going on air and saying, these aren't really ransom notes. They're being described or called ransom notes. I would say this is more of a demand letter because this is coming from somebody who claims to know Nancy Guthrie's whereabouts. Now, people are going to say, hey, STS, why did you air this? Because it's news, and we don't know what's going on. And when you listen to Harvey Levin in this, he tends to think that this is potentially real, although it seems like law enforcement's not taking it too seriously. And if they are taking it too seriously, we haven't really been privy as to why. So without further ado, this is owner of TMZ, Harvey Levin, and his co-anchor here just a few moments ago.
Share a little bit of news with you. The person who has been incessantly contacting us.
Although saying, stopped for a while.
Yeah. We got another letter today from this person, an email saying, I know where her body is and who the kidnapper is. Give me half a Bitcoin and I'll tell you. And this person has been really persistent, yeah, knowing that if it's a scam, it's a federal crime.
Right. But they also made the point that they wanted to make it clear that they have nothing to do with it.
Right.
They've been out of the country, but who knows?
We forwarded
to the FBI,
right,
as we have in the past.
Right.
And for whatever reason, and this is the thing we haven't figured out, you have to assume that the law enforcement, they believe that this person is not legit. Otherwise, they would have advised Savannah to pay the money.
I'm going to hold it right there. One thing that struck me is in this description, this oral description. By the way, TMZ, you got these two guys just standing in the middle of a room, and then this third guy just looking at them like they're aliens that just landed in this newsroom. So kind of a weird setup, but who am I to talk? Because TMZ has a hell of a lot of people looking at them than they do at us, which is a sad statement. However, The Godfather, let me start with you. Once again, TMZ rearing their heads here, whether you like it or not, claiming that it got not one but two letters. When they were discussing it just now, they were talking about Nancy Guthrie's body. But in the body of the article, the actual TMZ article, this person claims to have seen her alive, Nancy Guthrie alive, with whoever the abductors are in the state of Sonora. So I'm not sure why they came on the TMZ video saying body, when apparently the within the actual story, it claims that she was seen alive in the state of Sonora. But Phil Ramos, your reaction to just yet another TMZ interjection here into this case, now 64 days in, apparently some other letter, and then a second letter that followed. Now they're asking for a half a Bitcoin, apparently, which makes zero sense to me, considering that the reward money is at $1.2 million and a half a Bitcoin would be somewhere in the maybe $40,000 range. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, anything that has come out of TMZ has made no sense at all. I mean, what? Why even bother with the clickbait here? Just call the FBI and say, hey, we got something here. What's the point of going on the air and doing this? It's ridiculous. And apparently it's gray t-shirt day there at TMZ. So everybody's got the word to wear the same thing. I'm just shaking my head because they're still trying to get publicity out of this. It's let's get a little direct and a little bit of information that people don't want to hear. At this particular point, if Nancy was killed, and we all think that she was, even if they know where her remains are, with the amount of time that's passed, it's going to be very difficult to get her positively identified. Her body's decomposed to the point where she's not going to be recognizable physically, so it's going to be a lot of science and a lot of DNA. So, and then the point of the amount of money, you know, the $1 million is a heck of a lot more, and they're not asking for any anything except where is her body. You know, let's be frank, and you know, in my view, there's just no chance that this poor thing's still alive. So why even play that game with them?
This is a funny comment, which is why I brought it up. Harvey speaks more than Nanos does. Interesting. I got to be honest, and I'm not just saying this for the oohs and yahs, but if people were sending Surviving the Survivor these notes, I would not be reading them. I would just be sending them to the FBI, because that's what you really should be doing.
Exactly.
And I've talked about this before. On our biggest case, I've had someone come to me with some pretty big leads, which is a Dan Markell story. And I just went straight to authorities with that. And really, that's what they should be doing. But you know what? They're getting tons of clicks, and we're playing it on the show. But it's news. We just don't know if it's, quote unquote, real news, fake news, middle of the ground news. I have no idea. But let's play out the rest of the clip here, because they get into a few more of the details. Again, what's tripping me up is when you read the actual article, it says they saw her live. When you heard them discussing it, they're referring to her body. So I don't know if these guys have even read their own story. Who knows at this point? But here's the rest of what they had to say.
Can we just be really transparent?
Uh-huh.
I think you're right that the law enforcement doesn't. There's something.
I just can't figure out why.
There's
why not
something.
Take a flyer. The price of Bitcoin is much lower now. These are like, you can just take a flyer and see what the person knows. The most you lose is 20 grand, 25 grand.
I'll tell you why. My spidey senses tell me that there's something about this guy, because one of the emails he sent said early on, time is of the essence to do this. And then the next day he said, time is no longer of the essence. If he was pulling a scam, why would you say time is no longer the essence?
Right. You want to keep the value high.
You want to keep the value high.
Yeah.
And the fact that he said this made me think, this guy knows something.
Yeah, it's a way to look honest
and,
as well, though.
I'm not, look, right. I'm not FBI.
I don't need all the information they are, but
you're talking about
from the outside looking in, it sure seems like this person knows something.
Kurt, let me come to you first with a comment from Sandy Baker, who's emphasizing your name, I think, because you were left out of the last comments. I just want you to feel whole here, and here it is, Sandy Baker, with an all caps, Kurt. So, Kurt, you know, in one letter they say time is the essence. The next letter he says time is not of the essence. I guess Harvey took that as an honest, you know, admission that time is no longer important. So why wouldn't you believe this guy? What do you make of this?
I don't know. I'm kind of with Phil. It's getting, you know, a little bit ridiculous, this TMZ aspect of it. I agree. You know, I think that they should just keep quiet, pass the stuff on to the FBI. It's thankfully, though, on the flip side of that coin, thankfully, it's keeping the case alive, right? It's the media. It's keeping the media attention. So, you know, I just think if this is my mom, do I want to have to keep seeing TMZ shit, you know, all over the news about, hey, you know, we're getting this ransom note? And I don't know. I just think it's over the top.
Yeah. And you know what? I got some clarity here. So it's not Harvey's fault. And forgive me, I never remember the other guy's name, but the co-host. But it's apparently the person who wrote the letter, Bob. In one of the letters, because he sent two kind of back to back. One, the first letter, I presume, he says, I saw her, this is a direct quote, I saw her alive with them in the state of Sonora, Mexico. And then either in that letter or the following letter claims Nancy is dead. They just refer to it as in a separate message. So In one note, I presume, I saw him alive. And then in the next note, Nancy is dead. Is that a pretty big clue for law enforcement? If this guy sends notes back to back and in one letter she's alive and in the next letter she's dead, that there's a problem with the person sending the note, unless he saw her two different times. But the claims definitely seem to contradict one another.
Yeah, what everybody else already said, I think what most people are actually feeling, you know, TMZ a few weeks ago said they weren't going to report on this anymore and it went silent, and I doubt they got many. But the second they get another email from, it sounds like the same person who sent the ones early on. Is it semantics on the writer's part? It could be, but at the same time, it all goes back to, in my professional opinion, it's probably a hoax. That being said, it's something that they're going to follow up on. The FBI and the detectives working the case, they have to. And really that's just the electronic trail trying to figure out who's sending these things. Do I think that person saw her? Most likely not. Do I think that person knows her exact condition? Most likely not. But I think it's a safe assumption. Like Phil said, she's probably passed by now. So I think I've said it before. It's like a good psychic out there. I could sit there and write this in 10 seconds on a crime I knew nothing about and start putting all these little vague statements out there, and people are going to buy into it. Oh, we need to follow up on this. Doesn't mean we don't, but at the same time, it's TMZ. $1 million is a lot more than, you know, 30,000. So you do the math there as well.
Yeah. I don't know what Bitcoin's trading at. I think last I saw was the 70s or 80s. Divide that by two and then compare it to the 1.2 million. I think someone is taunting Savannah. There are a lot of sick people out there. Serenity could be right about that. But Phil Ramos, let's talk about this. First of all, the demands in this demand letter, they want a Bitcoin payment, half up front, half later, and claims that they can provide the quote unquote identity of the kidnappers and the location, which is somewhere they say in Sonora, Mexico. But Phil Ramos, from an FBI standpoint specifically, what do you have to do? Because this is going to get handed off to the FBI, almost certainly, not to Pima County. And if you're working at the agency, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that you can't just be like, oh, geez, here's TMZ and just like toss it in the garbage behind, you know, over your shoulder. You got to do something with it. So what do you have to do now, Phil?
Well, you got to do your due diligence like you would on any other lead. And you probably have to do a little bit more because of the nature of this information and the way it was brought forward. It's, you know, the FBI's got tools that the sheriff's department doesn't, and they need to utilize those tools to find out, number one, if they can locate the IP address and make some kind of connection with that, which I'm surprised they haven't done that yet with the previous letters that they came. I mean, in my mind, they would have done what the FBI does and at least gotten a location where these letters were originating from and followed up on that. I don't think it's a matter of do they have the time and money to do that? Of course they do. Look how much has been spent on this investigation already. What's going to be a few thousand dollars more in trying to get the legitimacy of these letters verified and go from there? I think our one viewer probably has something going there that they're taunting Savannah, which would go back to the motive for this happening in the first place, if that's what the motive was and if it was in that direction. But we still don't know any more about the motive than we did 60 days ago. And it's a matter of why did this happen? And is it just a coincidence that it was a high profile public individual who is suffering from this along with her siblings and the rest of her family? I don't know that there's a clear answer to that.
Yeah. Let me take a break from the breaking news. And this breaking news is actually much more important to STS and our family, and a very sad bit of news. And I was partly running late because of that. And it's been a very long, heavy day. But I got word late last night that Steve Cohen's father suddenly passed away in his 80s. And Steve recently lost his mother. So it's been a tragic time for Steve. He's going through a really, really, really tough time. And, you know, COE and I and Spacey are trying to be there for him. We're going to do something, obviously, a little more formal, and I'll show some pictures of it. His dad's a great guy. I got to meet him a bunch of times. Very, very funny, very, very, very smart guy. And even though he's in his late 80s, still gone way too soon. And he took amazing care of his wife, who he's married to for well over 60 years. So been a very difficult bit of months for Steve and the whole STS family. And I wanted to mention it off the top, but we had this breaking news from TMZ and Nancy and all that. But I'm going to get some photos from Steve of his father and his mom. We've shown photos of his mom before. And we'll put up the COE will put up a YouTube community post if you want to, you know, wish him condolences and send him a message. You'll be able to do that on the YouTube page. But we really are a family here, and he lost both parents very close in time to each other. So I will be saying a prayer for Steve tonight. And thank you guys for listening to me on that one. Bob, to you. So the letters, again, according to at least Harvey Levin, are being turned over to the FBI. But apparently it appears, and we really don't know what's going on, because the FBI keeps a very tight lip, but they keep sending them. So I guess the assumption is that this person hasn't gotten anything in return for these letters, which makes you think that law enforcement is kind of blowing off whoever this person is, because they probably don't think they have enough credibility. Is that what you read through the tea leaves, that they are not finding this to be, you know, credible enough to move forward and make some sort of payment?
My guess is they're not really making that decision. There might be some internal conversations kind of like we're having, but they're going to treat it as credible until it could be found out otherwise. Now, that being said, when it comes to investigations like this, no law enforcement agency is ever going to pay a ransom. That would be completely up to the family if they wanted to go that route, working with the law enforcement, with the FBI, with the sheriff's department, all of those types of things. But no one is ever going to pick up that bill. We've had them happen all the time. And you work through that. You work through those deadlines. It's just not something that's going to happen as far as the investigation goes. Now, the family might say, all right, I'm willing to do that. And then you come up with a plan and figure out how you're going to do it, where you're going to do it, all those things. And, you know, go drop your Bitcoin in the trash in the middle of Central Park and let someone come by and pick it up. However, it's going to work out. But I do think they're treating it as credible simply because it's like all those other leads. You have to, when you're doing this, you can't dismiss something based on what you feel, because guess what? We might be wrong. You might be wrong. And we talked, I think, last week about second set of eyes and things like that, looking at it from different perspectives. You always have to do that. You have to treat all of these things like they're legit until you can prove that they're not.
Lest you think we are not global and I just am making stuff up off the top of the show. VCC, look at this, modern age, the modern day consumer of news. Watching on a flight from Aruba International to Toronto International, hence the global phenomenon. VCC, have a safe flight and thank you for watching on the, and say hello to the pilot for me. Kurt Dabb, the Mexico angle, forget the TMZ note, but you worked that and the reality of where Tucson is, 60 miles from Tucson, is there's a lot of cartel movement, a lot of drug movement. I mean, you think there's a legitimate chance that you could be in Mexico or this was done by someone south of the border potentially?
Well, I think it would be silly to discount that or discredit that information if that, you know, information came in. But I think it's absolutely reasonable that she could be down there. There's specific things that happen when a missing person goes. There's certain steps that the investigators have to take. And one of those steps that should be done or should have been done early on is notifying all the POEs, all the ports of entry in Arizona, New Mexico, California. I don't know about Texas, but why not the whole southern border? Looking for any vehicles that go in, you know, from this time frame to this time frame. So now the FBI, the task force, if you will, can go back. And I hope that they've been looking at all of those vehicles that have gone through because they know the time frame. They went back and did it. I just don't know if the information got about the kidnapping and the missing person originally got, you know, did the POEs get that information immediately? I don't know what the time frame was. So it, theoretically, they could have drove through the border through a POE. They could have simply drove a number of undesignated routes that smugglers use in and out of Mexico through Aravaca, different places. You know, we have almost a couple hundred mile border with Mexico. There's a lot of places to get in and out of. So, yeah, I think it's possible. But the only information I think that has even touched on that are, you know, some of these ransom notes that are coming in. And it's my understanding those ransom notes are coming into TMZ through a non-tracked thing on their website. It's not even an email that gets sent from somewhere. Someone just fills out a form and, you know, sends it. So whether or not they're going to be able to have any luck tracking down that, I don't think so. But they did catch one of the dudes.
Yeah. Icicle, used to be Icicle Aksu. Now it's Icicle O Music from Turkey. Look at this, gifting 50 memberships. Thank you so much, Icicle. Incredibly generous of you. Phil Ramos, let's just talk for a minute since the demand letter brings up Sonora, Mexico, which is just south of the border. In what ways, I mean, have you personally ever worked with law enforcement in Mexico from, you know, a Vegas standpoint? And what is that relationship like? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I have, and it's not a good one. I mean, we had a female fugitive that was in Mexico for a year. The FBI tried to use their resources to get her taken into custody, but here's what the Mexican authorities wanted. This was a case file that was three volumes, probably 1,000 pages worth of reports. The Mexican authorities wanted us to have our entire case file translated into Spanish given to them, and then they would determine if we had enough probable cause to arrest her. So they made it as difficult as they could, probably because she was down there living, paying off the cops that, you know, don't hear, believe anything you hear from me. It all depends on the legitimacy of the agency that you're dealing with. I mean, there, you know, I don't mean to cast aspersions on a country in general, but man, there is so much corruption on that, on those border states and the ports of entry, like Kurt was talking about. You could, they've got it down to where, you know, they'll call a guy up and say, "Hey, we're coming through. We're in a black van, and there's bundles in the back. Just wave us through." And you know, as they're going through, they toss out an envelope with $1,000 in it. And I mean, that happens all the time.
Yeah. I would assume that the threshold for probable cause is probably equal in here in America and Mexico. I don't think the threshold for probable cause any higher in Mexico. How frustrating was that for you to deal with?
It was very frustrating. We tried going through the State Department. We tried going through the embassy. We did everything we could, and the FBI was fully on board, cooperating with us, and you know, with their contacts in Mexico. But even they couldn't get past that. And we knew exactly where this woman was, what she was doing, her daily routine. But you know, we don't have any authority in Mexico. The FBI didn't have authority in Mexico. Only the Mexican cops could arrest. Make arrests in their own country. And for that reason, you know, they're, you know, it's like the old days when you wanted to go see a show on the Strip. If you didn't have $20 to tip the maitre d', you were sitting up in the nosebleeds instead of in the front row.
I tell you, you don't have to fight with people from Pittsburgh. Everyone from Pittsburgh, for some reason, is very nice. I've never met a not nice person from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there is Kelly McLellan. So shout out to Pittsburgh, which I don't think I've ever done till this very moment. Let me just take us. It's a Monday. It was got heavy for a few minutes there. So let me just take us completely off the rails. And Bob actually mentioned this in his last or two answers ago. So, Bob, to you, have you ever known you guys, Pima, TPD, anyone to use the services of a psychic or a medium to help with a case? Is that something that you would get in trouble for?
So officially use them, I'm not aware of our agency ever doing that. You know, you hear about it anecdotally on TV shows, Forensic Files, things like that. But I will say this, I've worked cases before, and I'll go back to my time when I was our night detective squad supervisor, and we were working I'm going to call it a start of a similar case. We had a female who disappeared from her house and she ended up walking away, and she was located about a mile from her house. And it got some national attention. I don't know why, but there were several psychics who kept calling in, and we were told to follow up on it. And if it would come in the evening hours, our squad would deal with it. So I didn't want to task my guys and gals who were investigating other things to go chase a psychic around. So I actually went and did some of the things, and it was pretty much geography based. Hey, I feel like she's here, and I'd go walk the desert a little bit in the area. So I can say I've officially followed up on it. How official it was, it wasn't like they were being paid or anything like that. And I do know that during this case, psychics have reached out to the sheriff's department. And I don't know the amount of follow-up that they did, but again, it's one of those tips. You know, you don't want to bypass the one psychic who is actually a psychic. It's difficult, but you know, and it's all a balancing act. You know, I can go back to the case I was referencing, and everything that was told to us from that psychic was completely wrong. Wasn't even in the area where the victim was located. So you know, it is what it is. But on the official, does it happen? No. Are there some follow-ups? Yes, there are going to be some.
And then there's remote viewers who are actually some of them from the military who apparently can find things, but I don't know. I've never seen them used here. Bob, I got to ask you, I mean, your significant other, your wife, when you were a SWAT commander, it can't be easy to be the wife of a SWAT commander. How does that go down? Like, you're basically called out, your life's on the line every third night. Does she even, like, after a while, does she ask how it's going? Does she forget about you? How does all that work?
She forgot about me a long time ago. And it's just, she was never, it's weird to say, she was never really that interested. And I wouldn't come home and regale her with stories. She's actually found out about some shootings that we were involved in. Like I was shot at, and like a week or two later, she would find out because someone like Kurt would come by and say, "Hey, did you hear about this?" She's like, why wouldn't you tell me about that? I'm like, well, I got home late and you were sleeping and I woke up and you were at work. And then by then I forgot about it. So it was always a good, and maybe that's why we've done so well and we've balanced it out and, you know, just was always good about, you know, those types of things. And I'm sure early on, like every law enforcement family, you know, it was a lot more worrisome. And then she's like, you know, I would go out with incredibly highly trained men and women and we'd kick some ass and I'd come home. And as long as I came home, she really didn't care. As long as there wasn't that knock that everybody worries about.
Well, that's the most important thing. Thankfully, no knocks for Kurt or Bob. Kurt, let's just put a period on this part of the show relating to the TMZ. If you're just tuning in, TMZ got not one, but two new, I'll call them demand letters. It appears since there's, you know, number one, conflicting claims here. One letter says saw them alive. The other says saw the body. The source is totally anonymous. It's got this ridiculous pay a half Bitcoin now and a half Bitcoin later demand wise. Do you think it's fairly safe to call this a hoax, Kurt?
Well, I mean, I think, like, you know, it was just earlier in the show that whether or not it's a hoax, it has to be followed up on. It's going to give that the task force detectives and special agents something to do. But again, I don't think that they're going to get anywhere with it Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
No.
What's it do to, what about from like an investigation process? Does it really muddy up the investigation?
Well, not this specific tip because, you know, like I said earlier, the way that the tips are coming into TMZ is they're coming in through a tip line that's completely anonymous. The sheriff's department even has them. So I don't think there's much follow-up that's going to be able to be done.
This person says two letters that are different, low location, sounds a bit shady. A lot of nutty people out there who are thinking, well, maybe I can benefit off of this. The person who's living this, aside from Cameron and Annie, is, of course, Savannah Guthrie, host of the Today Show. And today she made her return on day 64, I believe it is. 64 days later, she returned to the Today Show. Let's watch this as human beings here, not as law enforcement officers. Let's watch this as humans, and we'll get the guy's reaction in a minute.
To you today on this Monday morning. We are so glad you started your week with us, and it is good to be home.
Yes, it is good to have you back at home.
Well, here we go, ready or not. Yeah. Let's do the news.
Yes, so good to have you back.
We are back at 8:30 on this beautiful Monday morning, and it's a special Monday morning for us and for this crowd as well. Special because we're welcoming back our North Star.
Yeah.
SG, come on out here. Come on back up.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Good morning.
They've been waiting for you.
These signs are so beautiful. You guys have been so beautiful. I've received so many letters, so much kindness to me and my whole family. We feel it. We feel your prayers. So thank you so much. Thank
it's
you.
Not just today. They've been out here
every day.
Every day.
This is such a nice signs. Pocket square. I don't want to slobber on it. It's okay. No, it is. I know. I'm sorry.
How little is a million of them?
Okay. We love you.
Phil Ramos, the Godfather there first. Your thoughts on that?
What an incredibly strong woman that is. Your heart breaks for her. And the amount of sentiment and love that was in that crowd to her, who wouldn't break down on that? I just can't speak enough to the courage that she showed going back there. A lot of people just wouldn't be able to pull it off. This is a life changing event for all of them forever. Their lives are never going to be the same because of this. And for her to have that inner strength and the ability to do what she does as a professional in her business, well, it's frankly, it's just admirable.
Yeah. You see Lee from Tennessee here is always in the chat. I hope for Savannah that being back at work brings her another step in strength and healing. Kurt, you've been open about, dealing with personal issues and PTSD. What kind of benefit do you think this will have, or maybe not a benefit or a distraction or deterrent? I don't know. But what do you think going back to work will do for Savannah Guthrie?
That's part of the grieving process, man. It's extremely important to still carry on with your life and make it as normal as you can. And normalcy for her is going back home to New York, going back to work in front of the country and in front of the world. So I give her kudos. Like Phil said, she's I'll say it a little less succinctly. She's got balls of steel. I love that she went out there and showed her face and showed her emotions, because I cannot even, my mom lives down in Florida, Joel. And if anything ever happened to her, I'm sorry, you're going to be one of the first guys to get a call, because I can't imagine what she's going through. So I think it's absolutely awesome that she got back there and she's starting to get some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah. After I got the news about Steve, I checked on my mom, and I think, people don't realize any age when you lose your parents, doesn't matter if you're 5'10", if you're 100 and they're 120, it's incredibly difficult. So I'm with Kurt on that. It's sort of a giant FU to whoever did this, that she's out there fighting despite, it's not easy. And I've been on air during very difficult moments. I know a lot of people that have been on air during very difficult moments. Personally, being busy is good for me. I don't know how it is. It's different for everybody else. You saw these signs, Commander Bob, decide and do. And I think that's something that her mother told her when her father, when her husband passed, you've got to decide and do, if I'm correct about that. But it definitely comes from one of her two parents. And so someone had that sign, decide and do. What kind of message does this send to whoever did this, Bob?
The first thing, like the other guys have said, you're not going to beat me. You can hurt me, but you're not going to beat me. I'm strong. And everyone deals with tragedy differently. And to see her back at work, she even said it. They said, welcome home. And I thought that was pretty cool. And if that's where she feels comfortable, she's there 8, 10, 12 hours a day. All of us would say the same thing. I know when I lost people, going back to work was one of those biggest steps in like the healing process. It's like, all right, we're getting back to some normalcy, like everyone has said. This is completely different than anything I think any of us have been through. Death is one thing. To have this happen is completely different, because you don't have answers. You don't have that closure, but life still moves on for everyone. And everyone deals with that differently. And how you individualize that and how you move on is just part of the healing process. And to have those signs out there in the crowd, those quotes that her mom said to her, that's going to help her. And it's just going to be part of this process. There are going to be peaks and valleys. We all know that. It's going to, she's going to probably break down on air. Things are going to, like this TMZ stuff is going to kick up. She's going to hear that at the workplace, at home, all of those things. But, kudos to her and to everyone for supporting her and being there today. I was wondering when it would happen, and it happened today, and I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. April 6th, she's back at work. Judy Herbert, thank you for your generosity, always gifting us super chats, and thank you for being a part of the community here. Phil, I mean, to that point, great point by Bob, things are going to quote unquote kick up, like you just said, and lo and behold, she's definitely home from work because it's an early morning show. But you know, like 5 p.m. Eastern or in that hour is roughly, or 6 Eastern is when that TMZ news broke on the East Coast. What do you think that does to her and the you know, and her siblings, but she in particular, because she's on air, it's this wave again of agony, and now she's supposed to be back on the show. I'm sure she has an understanding that if something's too difficult, she can, you know, be out tomorrow. But what about these waves of information, bits and pieces, and then not knowing? How do you think that's going to affect her as she moves along hosting the Today Show?
Well, she's very resilient. We've all seen that. And, you know, both Kurt and Bob have brought up some excellent points. We all have lost good friends in the line of duty, and it's heartbreaking. And sometimes it's easier to go back to work, and sometimes it's not. For her to be able to do this, it's amazing to me, because it's, you know, you've lost someone very close to you. And the trauma that comes from that, especially with a parent, it's so hard to overcome. It all depends on how well you can handle the trauma associated with losing a loved one. I mean, my own wife is going through tons of trauma with losses that she's had in the last couple of months. And it's amazing how resilient you can be, but it's also, you know, those little demons creep into your head, and it's hard to get them out. And so the grieving process, like Kurt said earlier, sometimes it takes a long time to get through that grieving process.
Mm. Nancy would be so proud of Savannah. Thank you for that, Phil. This is from S. Somerville. I have no doubt. I was actually going to go to Kurt next. However, this is definitely more of a Bob kind of a question here. I thought this was interesting. You see the crowd. I'll play it with no audio this time. And then I'll ask the question here. If I can
see today on
both at once. But this is, you'll see the crowd shot. And Bob, I was reading, they only let 75 people in. I don't know what they do on a normal day. And they all went through a metal detector. From a tactical standpoint, for a lunatic, this is an occasion to maybe figuratively and literally take a shot at someone like Savannah Guthrie. Had to be a very high security day at 30 Rock. Mm-hmm. Walk us through that. Explain that. I mean, there are crazy people out there. There's a lot of great people, but there's also a lot of crazy people. What do you have to do to protect, even though it's just 75 people? Again, these people could be targets. There could be someone in there that's targeting Savannah. So how do you deal with this from a tactical standpoint, which is your job as a SWAT commander?
This is, you know, I don't say it's easy, but you start at the inside and you work out. Off camera, I would imagine this, just because of the dynamic of what's going on, that she has some sort of detail, a little personal protective detail that is there specifically for her in case something happens. Swoop in, get her to a safe room. Now, from an exterior standpoint, you've got New York, you've got tens of thousands of windows, and you just can't control all of that. But controlling what comes and goes, having a lot of eyes on the exterior, seeing what's going on. And it's one of those things, you just can't live in fear. You can't stop everything. You just look at that building directly behind them. I see literally hundreds of threats, and you can't cover them all. So you set up, you know, observation posts, you set up, you know, whatever they might have access to. And I don't know what the Today Show has. I don't know if she has a personal detail, if NYPD or the FBI is still helping out with things like that. I imagine there'd be a higher amount of officers in the area today, just because of what you've said and what's been going on and the threats that have been made, and just, you know, the actuality of it. But it's just a matter of identifying the threats and putting people in good positions to deal with them. It's not actually hard if you have the resources. And it's something that when cops do this, when SWAT teams do it, it's pretty easy, quite honestly, because you've done it so often.
Mm. What sorts of situation, I'm curious, in Tucson, what would elicit the need to have a sniper on a roof outside of, let's say, the president visiting?
I've deployed, unfortunately, police officers' funerals. It's usually dignitary protection ones, higher ranking officials. I've done it for I've worked personally for 5 presidents. I've done king and queen details, dignitaries, SCOTUS, you know, Supreme Court justices that have been here. The likes of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and a lot of folks, they come to Tucson on occasion, rent out resorts, and they hire us to provide security. So it's all things like that. It's high profile. It's, I always say high profile, people who have a higher profile, who nut jobs will come out and sometimes try and do things. I've done it for witnesses, at trials, and we've also done it for the suspects at trials, because they have had such a threat on them, we've actually had to provide some security details for them. So right there, it runs the gamut of things that you can have to put a detail together for.
Well, why, for a police officer's funeral? Because you're afraid that the perps or bad guys are going to take shots at the cops?
Things, yeah. It's just they're different in nature. They bring out all kinds of people. Wow. If you remember the Gabby Gifford shooting, and there was a Christina Taylor Greene was a 9-year-old who was killed the same day at the same shooting. We had Westboro Baptist coming in, and they heard, and the Hells Angels heard about that. So it's not so much it's the ancillary folks, those hangers on, just the people who don't know how to react. You know, it's such a different dynamic when a city's getting closed down and you have these, processions that are miles long, and just people that come out for these types of things are sometimes not thinking straight. So you just never know who's going to show up. And that's really what those types of things are for.
Now, does your wife know that you did protection for 5 presidents, or does she not even know that?
No, she doesn't. She does know that, because those are usually long, long days. Like, where have you been? Like, I was with one of the Bushes today.
Kurt, this next thing, I know that you said last time you're fairly religious guy and you go to church. One of the things that came up over the weekend, then we'll get back to the investigation for the remaining minutes. But one of the things that came up, Savannah was just questioning, I think, which is something any normal person would do. But it came up about, just her relationship with God and why is this stuff happening to me? I think that's a very normal human reaction. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I reenlisted with God 2 years ago, and I lived without Him for a very long time. I'm not going to turn this into a sermon or anything, but having Him back in my life has paid dividends untold fold. I can't even count. So having strong faith in that, if it's God's will, she will be returned safely, and if it's not in God's will, well, that's not for us to decide. Decisions like those are made at a higher level than we are ever even going to be able to understand. So I just continue to pray for her, for her family, and the safe return and or recovery of Nancy as soon as possible. And I truly do believe that this case is going to be solved. It's just a matter of time. It's literally a matter of time.
I agree. It's going to be solved. And I agree. And it's probably going to be solved. Definitely will be solved when we least expect it, because no one's expecting it to happen right now, but it could. COE, is this, this is a soundbite. Can you play this one, COE? This is Savannah talking. By the way, just so you know, this is to her church, I believe, in New York via video here.
His revival and resurrection mean the same for us. We celebrate today the promise of a new life that never ends in death. But standing here today, I have to tell you, there are moments in which that promise seems irretrievably far away, when life itself seems far harder than death. These moments of deep disappointment with God, the feeling of utter abandonment. For most of us, there will come a time in our life when these feelings hold sway. In our tradition, we are taught to take comfort in the fact that our friend, Jesus, in his short life, experienced every single emotion that we humans can feel. That his taking on the form of humanity made him not a distant observer to our pain, but a hands-on experiencer of it. When we celebrate today, this is what we celebrate. And I celebrate too. I still believe. And so I say with conviction, Happy Easter.
Phil Ramos, you know, she says there's moments where life seems harder than death. She's experienced deep feelings of abandonment, but she still has faith.
Yeah, that's tough, man. Born and raised Catholic, I was an altar boy and into the church in my youth. But the downside to being a police officer, homicide detective, is you see the ugliest things that humans are capable of doing to other humans. A subsection of that is the innocent children that suffer the way that they suffer. And it has caused me to question my faith. I mean, how could God let a 3-year-old child lose their life by a parent by being shot in the head? How is a 7-year-old girl stuffed in a toilet after she was sexually assaulted and strangled? I would ask our priests at the church, I said, explain this to me. I have a really hard time understanding this. And I've questioned my belief and my faith in God, that God would let that happen. And, you know, the standard answer, we don't have an answer to that. It's just God's will. And to me, it's like, I don't get it. I don't know if I buy that. I don't accept the suffering that these little children go through because of why. Nobody has a good answer for that.
Excellent point. I've asked the same thing. I'm part of the Jewish faith. I've more than once asked a rabbi questions like that, and they don't always have the answer, but sometimes the answer is that there is no answer. You just have to have the faith. Bob, you haven't weighed in on this light topic. Your thoughts? She's questioning. I don't think she's questioning Jesus. I don't think she's questioning her relationship. I think she's just asking some questions. What do you think?
I think that's exactly it. Phil hit it right on the head. The things that we see in our professions in the near 100 years between the three of us that we've encountered, it's you always ask that. You almost ask that on a daily basis. Why, how, you know, all of these things. And having that faith to fall back on is huge. I will never question anyone's faith, no matter what it is. Whether it's religious based, whether it's science based, those are individual decisions that each person gets to make. And I will respect everyone the way they want to choose to live their lives. And in this situation, to hear what she had to say, it's like Phil, I was born and raised Catholic. And you know, I'll say now I'm a typical practicing Catholic, occasionally here and there, I still go to church. And unfortunately now it's funerals and weddings. And, you know, I've lost, my dad and my sister in the last 9 months. So, you know, it's all part of that road and that journey that we have. And, you know, but it is so important to people. I've seen the change in Kurt since he's, like he said, re-enlisted, kind of found that faith again. We've been through so much together and to see how important that is. And I'm sure hearing what Savannah had to say and knowing what her mom, her background and her religion here in Tucson, how important that is to their family. And that's something that they're going to grasp onto for the rest of all of their lives for forever. It's important for people to have something like that. Even if you don't get the answers that you want, you'll never get the answer to why. Sometimes the answer to why is people are horrible. Humans as a species are a horrible species. It's unfortunate, but it's the truth. And that subset is incredibly low, but, you know, unfortunately we have to see that day in and day out. And that's why that faith, whatever it is important. And I'll kind of stop there.
Yeah. And that's, I love that answer. And it's a big part of why I actually wanted to write the book that I did, Surviving Survivor. Cause that's one of the questions I asked my mom in the book. And her response didn't surprise me. I asked my mother why the Holocaust happened. Why did, you know, all these people die, not just Jewish people. You had plenty of other gypsies, gay people that's helped hide the Jews, which they helped my mom. My mother's answer was, what the hell do I know? That was her answer. So I wrote that whole book, and that was a Carm likes to blow like the important moments, asking, you know, what do I know? So everyone figures it out in at their own pace, at their own time. But I do like the phrase re-enlisted. So here, I got to move it along a little bit because you've got Michigan playing UConn, and you got it looks like the whole panel rooting for Michigan, except maybe me, but maybe I'll root for one of my best friends is from Ann Arbor. I don't know what's going on. But so we found out last week through some great reporting, as per usual, by Brian Enton, that apparently the first 5 hours of this case, they were looking for a person who they thought wandered off. And then we learned that the person arriving on scene had never been a lead detective in a homicide. A lot of questions about that. This is Brian Enton now speaking to someone who has not yet been identified within law enforcement, talking about this, and he wanted his voice altered. So you're going to have to look at the subtitles here. Let's watch this together, and then we'll get reaction from the Pima guys and the Vegas guy as well.
Say are the biggest mistakes when it comes to the Nancy Guthrie investigation, from what you know?
Speaking with some people that actually know the intimate knowledge of this investigation have told me that there was an immediate rush to judgment on what was happening at that scene, and it was that Nancy had somehow wandered off. And so they rushed to that judgment, stayed with that judgment, and then ran the investigation as if this was a search and rescue issue, opposed to a possible criminal issue.
From what you know, were the initial people who responded inexperienced?
From what I understand, the people that were there on the scene were not tenured homicide detectives. They didn't have a lot of experience in homicide at that point, to include the supervisor, who, from my understanding, never investigated a homicide before being installed as the supervisor for the homicide unit.
I'm going to hold it there because there's a lot that's going to come out here. Phil Ramos, let me go to you first, who's already shaking his head. We learned from this person who's remaining anonymous that there was an immediate rush to judgment. They thought that it was a situation where Nancy wandered off, and I think that was for at least the first 5 hours of this investigation, calling it a search and rescue and not criminal. And then add on to that that this was not a tenured, this is not to say this person never investigated a homicide, but they were never a lead detective in a homicide. We're not a tenured homicide detective. And both Bob and Kurt have talked about the issues with kind of rookies teaching rookies. Let's start with the first thing. How problematic is it if this is not a wandering off situation to treat it like such for the first 5 hours of an investigation?
We've talked about this a little bit. There's two disciplines that come into play when missing persons detectives arrive at a scene versus homicide detectives arriving at a scene. Missing persons guys are looking for evidence of a person who's either voluntarily missing, has decided I don't want to live here anymore and I'm gone. Elderly patients with their mental issues that some of them have, like in this case, it was suspected that way. So versus homicide, where you go into a scene and you're looking for blood spatter, any signs of, you know, the degree of violence involved in the death. So many times the responding missing person guys will miss the signs of a homicide, a murder. And I've had that happen in a few cases. So when this came out, and they're acting on the information that was given to them by the people calling in and reporting what the incident was. So if they go out there thinking, well, she's walked away, she's elderly, and you know there might be some dementia issues, then they're going to focus their efforts based on that information versus here's blood and people heard screaming and a car took off screeching its tires and she would never do this. So the lack of experience, it seems that was involved in this is not a good thing, man, because if you don't know what you're looking for in either set of circumstances, then you're going to miss stuff. I heard that what you were referring to, that the one of the first responding investigators there had never responded to a homicide or never investigated a homicide. That's critical, man. If you don't know what to look for right away when you walk through that door, at a murder scene, you're going to mess up the case. It's possible that that's what happened here.
And Phil, how long do you need to, if you're taking someone under your wing as a homicide detective, how long does it take to marinate, so to speak? Like, how do you know when that person is ready to go it alone?
It's a lot like field training. When you get a brand new rookie out of the academy, here we have a 6-month training period where they've got a field training officer with them, and you do the evaluations and you check them off on officer safety issues, how they conduct themselves with the public and stuff like that. In homicide, all that stuff has just got to be second nature. I wasn't comfortable testing for homicide until I had 20 years on the department. 12 of those years were as an investigator working undercover and stuff like that. So nowadays, that's not even doable anymore. Most of the guys don't even last 20 years before they go into homicide. There's no substitute for experience in homicide. And if you get a new guy, you just have to take him under your wing, try and give him all the tools that you can, see what he does with those tools without compromising your own case that you're working. And then, you know, the day will come when, yeah, you're ready to take the lead on this scene, and I'll do the witnesses. You got the scene, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, what a different type of job then, where you can, I mean, literally lives are in your hand. Phil, here's a question, and we'll get to Pima guys here, but from Icicle, do you think Savannah returning to her routine may provide insight if she were the intended target? Offenders might re-engage follow-up behavior. If nothing occurs, it means that it was an opportunistic rather than targeted case here or occurrence. Do you agree with that, that maybe this shows us something or not necessarily?
It could. I don't think that the letters from TMZ today, when she first went back to work, were a coincidence. I think that was exactly where those letters came out. If we're going to go with the planned route of a high profile victim, then that might show its ugly face again. But I'm one of those people that think it's got nothing to do with Savannah or what she did, and so I don't think that there's going to be any consequences of her going back on the air. When in reference to any associated activity that could be tied to what happened with her mom.
From Ellie, condolences to Steve Cohen. If you're just tuning in, he lost his father last night suddenly. We celebrate your dad's life. Very kind. Thank you. Kurt, since you're the retired homicide detective, and then I'll play out the rest of this. What is 5 hours, in your opinion, where you're searching for someone you think wandered off, if in fact this was a homicide or a kidnapping and abduction?
Well, I think, first of all, it just pisses me off each day that goes by and each day that I hear, you know, the inexperience of these detectives and deputies. And yeah, they're 100% right. These guys were inexperienced homicide investigators. The sergeant of the homicide unit, who I know is a good detective, worked child crimes for many years, never worked homicide. He's the homicide sergeant. When our homicide sergeant would leave, they'd be on vacation or what have you, invariably another sergeant or sometimes even a lieutenant will step in for a homicide sergeant if we got a call. Bob had stepped in as a night detective sergeant for a homicide call. And I remember talking to him, asking him, well, not you, because you know, but there were a couple other individuals. Most of the individuals that would step in that position had zero idea how to run a homicide. So when you're looking to them for information and they're telling you, you're in charge, I'm responsible, right? I don't know shit about homicide. You do your work, you tell me what you're gonna do. And with this case, you have a zero experienced homicide sergeant. You have, I don't know how many were in the unit when you left, Bob. Was it four or was it back up to six? I think probably four or three.
I think it was five, actually.
Okay.
In that ballpark.
Yeah, so in that ballpark, anywhere between three and five. But they're only investigating 3 to 4 homicides a year. That's not
you're not getting experience. And some of the detectives that are in homicide didn't even want to be in homicide. If you're going to do homicide, you got to have a calling to do it. Phil didn't do it until 20 years as a cop. Like, that is mind-boggling to me. And by the way, Phil is the guy that I wanted to be. I wanted to be that old, grizzled homicide detective. And unfortunately, I got to be the grizzled homicide detective, not old.
How long were you in before you went over to homicide?
I went into homicide in 2009, so I was on 8 years.
Okay.
And I worked violent crimes. I worked street detective, plainclothes, and school resource officer on patrol. But just getting back to it, it was a shit show from the beginning. At the sheriff's department, the missing person detective is a homicide detective. It's one unit. I was the missing person detective for all 7 years that I was in homicide. I loved it. They just don't have the experience and they don't want to be there. So there's no passion for the job of a homicide detective, I guess is what I'm saying, at the sheriff's department. And Sheriff Manos could have deputized a ton of retired homicide detectives to come work this case. He could have took and reassigned homicide detectives, former homicide detectives that are in different positions within the agency to work this case at the beginning. And the facts are, he did not do it. He was running the case and a number of his chiefs and a couple of the captains. They were running the investigation because there's zero experience in the homicide unit. And you know who has experience as a homicide detective? One of those individuals that was running the investigation, Juan Carlos Navarro. He has experience as a homicide detective, but he should not be running the case as a captain. That's a sergeant's job to manage the case. It's a detective's job to run it. Again, the detective is in charge. The people above, they're just responsible. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, I think this is really important. And you're getting some inside scoop here. Is Juan Carlos still in the department?
Yeah, he's a captain.
He's still a captain. Okay.
Yeah, he's had his fingers in this. I can see it. I've heard.
Yeah.
We still have contact with the agency, so yeah. it's just nonsense. But again, it's not insurmountable. It's not stuff that can't be overcome in court. It truly can, but it's going to be incumbent upon those brand new baby detectives to dot their I's and cross their T's and make damn sure that they took good notes so they're able to chronologically explain what they did, why they did it, and when. What was it, Bob? Why'd you do what you did when you did it? Right? They got to explain it.
Wow. Thank you to G and TJ's mom and here to Marcia Rodriguez. Thank you very much for that super chat. Cute dog. All right, here. By the way, Fred Nethel got groomed today, and it wasn't 5 minutes after that Fred, who never goes in the pool, decided it'd be a good idea to go in the pool. So now he smells like a wet pool dog again. All right. Money well spent. Here we go. This is the rest of this interview. This is Brian Enten, News Nation legend, interviewing someone we don't know, who's either current or former law enforcement here.
The supervisor who first responded to Nancy Guthrie's house had never investigated a homicide?
Correct.
How is that possible?
Well, you have decisions made by people that will install friends and people that can do stuff for them, opposed to people that are there on their merit and can do the job correctly.
Do you think not enough evidence was collected?
The fact that detectives had to return to that location not once but several times leads me to believe that they should have handled it differently. They should have kept the scene secure.
Do you get the sense right now that there's anyone that they're seriously looking at?
The people I've talked to that are still in the know on this investigation tell me that there's no direct suspect right now. No name on the table.
Is that shocking?
Not with how the investigation's gone so far. I mean, you have individuals that are either lucky as hell or more cunning than a lot of people seen in the past. If you take the first extremely lucky, maybe his luck will run out, but so far it hasn't. But if you take the second one that is extremely cunning, there's a chance that he may have covered his tracks so well that we may not find out what happened right now.
I'm going to hold it right there and get to Bob, and then we'll play out the last little bit. So, Bob, you heard this person say that whoever's, you know, the person in charge was installing friends instead of necessarily installing the right people, meaning as either detectives or people in positions of power within the department, that this person feels that they could have kept this scene secure. And right now there's no direct suspect, no name. And this person is either really lucky or incredibly cunning. Your thoughts on this aspect of the interview?
I agree with everything that they said. We've been saying that for a few weeks now, you know, without knowing the exact details of what happened behind the scenes. And I also agree that, you know, initially when the day the video came out, I remember saying this person has no idea what they're doing, you know, and as it's evolved, I'm like, well, there might be, I might have to backtrack that because it is one of those two things. I think it's a mix. But the interview says it all, things that we've said. In the unfortunate side, it goes back to, you know, that things that we espoused in our agency, people just want to work for good people. Merit matters. Your experience matters. Unfortunately, the higher profile assignments, the better assignments, they are not usually typically merit-based. I will say this. The sheriff, he is he's afraid of experts. He really is. If you've been in an assignment, he says, if you've been there for 2 years, you should move. He wants a lot of people who are average at something than a handful of people who are excellent at something. And I'm sorry, if a family member of mine is a victim of a homicide, I want the best. I don't want someone who's, they're okay. I don't want a SWAT team member rescuing me if they haven't been on hundreds of missions. And that is a decision that he has to live with. And he has said that for his entire career, and that's on him. So for that aspect, this entire investigation is on him because he wants it this way. And he can't say he doesn't. He has said that for decades. Any middle-aged guy can be a SWAT guy. Anyone, he thinks that anyone could be a homicide detective. Anyone could be a homicide supervisor. No, you can't. I was on call with SWAT for 20 years. You don't do that unless you want to do that. That is long, drawn out nights, things like that. Kurt knows it. Phil knows that. If you don't have that passion, you're going to be like, whatever. I'll get there when I get there, when you should be sprinting to get your clothes on and getting in your car and getting into these scenes. All of that matters. And for that, this is all on Sheriff Nanos for that matter. He has chosen. That's the way he wants his agency run. He wants 350 average cops as opposed to 350 excellent cops who are awesome at their jobs and want to do it. And that's 100% on him.
I have a very weird brain because the entire time you were talking there, Bob, I was having an alternate conversation in my head, wondering, like, what would you do if a nurse walks in and you're getting a colonoscopy? And she's like, meet Dr. So-and-so. This is his first ever colonoscopy. Drop your drawers. Like, you wouldn't, you know, and this,
yeah,
you know, that's, you can't really, it's not an even accounting there, but a lot of ways, these, you know, homicide, I mean, they literally are dealing in life and death matters, justice issues. And it's crazy that this guy is thinking the way he's thinking with people's lives in the crosshairs. It's just nuts. But there's a follow up super chat here. Do you think he's going to be replaced soon? This is about Chris Nanos. Any thoughts on who? So I'll throw that to you, Bob.
Well, I do know that the entire agency wants him replaced. I do know that the entire community wants him replaced. When I say entire, I can't speak for 100%, but you've heard the numbers. I think at this point, the entire nation wants him replaced. There are so many things that have come to light that we've all known for years, and now this has brought it to light. The unfortunate part is he's an elected official. So short of him resigning, or he can retire and ride off into the sunset, his legacy is set. There's nothing that is going to change his legacy now. Daily, something new comes out, like, hey, today I carried my gun through TSA. Hey, I lied on a deposition. Hey, I did this, I did that. You can't make this shit up. It's the gift that keeps on giving, but it's unfortunate for the folks who still work there because they still have to deal with it. The person at interview is so scared that he's going to be found out or she's going to be found out that they have to black out the face and change the voice. But the agency, the folks now are starting to speak up because it's just gotten to the point of ridiculousness and something has to give. There is an active recall going for him that runs through July if they can get enough signatures, there could be a recall election. There's a couple other things on the board with the Pima County Board of Supervisors where he has to answer certain questions and there's some statutory requirements. So all of that being said, who knows if there's going to be a change? If he doesn't want to change, oh, I forgot to say that last week he was also him and four of his handpicked commanders were found to have violated the Pima County ethics policy, and they've used their position to influence a political outcome of the last election. So that just came out last week. So again, these are all the things that they keep doing. He keeps doing. That's who he wants with him at the top of our agency or their agency. And they are lying for him. They are backing his play. And I haven't said this, but I've thought about it so much. Those commanders, they have to look themselves in the mirror. They have to be the ones to decide at what point enough is enough. You got your job. You got your paycheck, whatever it is you wanted to do. But at some point, right is right and wrong is wrong. And in law enforcement, we've chosen to put our lives on the line for the difference between right and wrong. And so all that being said, I think you know where I stand. And so we'll see how it plays out.
You know what, Bob? They need to stand. They need to stand up. Chief Gerard Moretz needs to stand up. Chief Joe Cameron needs to stand up. Chief Scott Lowing needs to stand up. Chief Jesus Lopez needs to stand up. Captain Juan Carlos Navarro needs to stand up. Captain, I could go on and on and on. Those are all public names that are on the Sheriff's Department website. Those are the command staff. Fire off emails, people. Tell them now is the time to stand up because it's just ridiculous. And Bob, it's not their department. It is our department. You know, Rick Cassigar asked me, why are you so pissed off at Chris? What did he do to you? I said, it's not what he did to me, man. I said, it's what he did to the place I loved, to my agency, our agency.
Really well said. I'm going to clip that, and I want people to share that. Kirk gets probably worried, but I'm like, I'm going to clip that. But that was impassioned. And if you're a commanding officer and you know that the entire department is against the guy leading the charge, speak up. Say something. You're a commander. You're in charge. Do something. I agree 100%. I don't know how this got up here, but this is not – let me bring up – this is the very end now of Brian Enton's interview.
See, we're hiding your identity right now because you could get in a lot of trouble for speaking out this way. What would you want to say to the sheriff if you could?
I would say that he ruined a great department. It's saleable if he steps aside, and I would ask him to step aside.
How would you describe morale at the sheriff's office right now?
I would say right now it's extremely low. This is the lowest I've seen it. There's a lot of embarrassment, especially with the news conversations that I've had with Manos, his interaction with the media.
When the press conferences started happening and the interviews with Manos, what were you thinking?
Shut your mouth. Stop talking. That's pretty much what we were all saying, is why is he out there saying that?
Phil Ramos, and obviously the Pima guys can weigh in, very impassioned plea by Kurt Dabb, and good on him for speaking. You know, even though he's retired, look, guy can still take shots from people in the department, especially the commanding officers. I'm sure they're not going to be too pleased to hear that, but sometimes it takes a man or a woman to stand up. You can tell how serious Kurt and Bob are about what has happened to our department, as they say, because it is the people of Pima County. Just curious to get your reaction. Also, no suspect. No, you know, they apparently started this the wrong way. Didn't have a legit person investigating to begin with. Just your thoughts on Kurt and Bob's reaction to all of this.
me say this, and I've said it before, between SWAT and homicide, you're not going to find any more dedicated and loyal officers to the job. 90% of SWAT callouts are end up in a shoot, don't shoot situation. Homicide, you're trying to bring some closure to the worst thing that could happen to a family. Our dedication doesn't have any limits. To hear these two guys have such hurt experiences and their mindset being what it is right now, my heart goes out to them. And I'm sure they're not the only ones that feel that way. There's nothing worse than going to work, knowing that you're going to be the cleanup hitter. And if you don't have somebody that's going to back you up, you're not going to swing as hard. And that's going to hurt the investigation in the long run. With all the dedication those two sections have, that's going to suffer when you have the circumstances that these guys have had. And brothers, my heart goes out to you guys, man. I'm so sorry.
Kurt, you want to jump in there? Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, and I hope the word does get out. And man, I just pray that those people in that position of power, look, man, there's power in numbers, guys. Stand together, make a statement. You're ruining an agency. You're corrupting an investigation with, well, I don't want to say corrupting. I don't want to get sued, but look, man, it's just a disgrace. It's a very poorly handled investigation from the get-go. And man, if Savannah hears this, Savannah, I'm so sorry that you're having to go through this and deal with what's going on at the Pima County Sheriff's Department, a once very highly thought of and loved agency. And you have my heartfelt apologies on behalf of them.
And Kurt, is there something else that we can do with Surviving the Survivor? I mean, we're not tiny, we're not big, but we're somewhere in the middle and we've got a platform. Is there anything we can do to help?
Look, I don't know, guys. I mean, Bob, it's strength in numbers, man. If every commander there came out and, you know, spoke up about the things that have been going on, but they're not going to because they know, and they're trying to protect their job. They're trying to protect their pensions, which is a bunch of bullshit. Stand up for what's right.
Bob, I'll give you the final word here. Usually goes to the Godfather, but a man who dodged bullets for 20 plus years can get the last word on my show. By the way, I saw in the chat, is there some sort of meeting tomorrow, Bob? Is there a Board of Supervisors meeting tomorrow?
Yeah, it's the Board of Supervisors. And like I said, they're following up on a statute that it's the very limited power that they have with another elected official where he will have to answer certain questions. And I know they're formulating those questions now about the, not even necessarily the investigation, the flaws there, but a lot of the other things that I've brought up, the lying under oath, the lying on his background, the 8 suspensions in 5 or 6 years in El Paso that he, you know, clerically erred, forgot about when he applied, things like that that have come out over the last couple months because of this investigation. So he's going to have to swear under oath to them. So that process, I believe, will start tomorrow. And then he'll have to get back to them, whether it be in writing and or in person. And it's unfortunate because I don't know the strength of what, again, they can do to him individually. Now, they have the power of the budget and things like that. So who knows how this plays out, but I can also tell you this. I've listed off all of those folks who are not happy with the sheriff. The Board of Supervisors is also not happy with the sheriff. So yes, that long way of saying yes, that meeting is tomorrow at 9 a.m. It's streamed. If you Google Pima County Board of Supervisors, sometimes they're quite long, but there's some good information that should be coming out tomorrow as well.
And Bob, is there anything that we can do? Seriously, like as a show, is there something that we can do?
That I don't know. You know, the biggest thing right now is making him responsible. And that's one thing he has stayed away from. He'll always say, oh, this is my fault. Well, if it's your fault, take responsibility. Sometimes that responsibility is very difficult in law enforcement. You have to step away. If someone says you should not be doing this job anymore, the blame cannot always be cast to the former sheriff, to the two or three disgruntled people in the agency who are always against you. This is now different. Have the professional integrity to stand up and say, you know what, it's time. Right off into the sunset. What y'all can do is keep the information out there. Keep the pressure on. If anyone's watching here and you're in Pima County and you're a registered voter, go sign the recall. It's bipartisan. I'm a Democrat. I've signed it. I will help. I will answer anybody's questions. I don't think I saw it in the chat. Policing should not be politicized. It should not be political. And you get into it. He was elected simply because of the letter next to his name. And I'm not gonna blame the citizens, because that's how most elections are solved and finalized. That's just the nature of it. But you know, if mistakes have been made, let's fix those. And Joel, keep the pressure on. That's what we can do.
All right, we are gonna do that. A quick programming note: Amy Hilliard has been missing into week two now. Her husband spoke out. She's a coffee shop owner, lives in Oakland, has a coffee shop in San Francisco, is a big kind of philanthropist in her community. We're looking to do a show on that tomorrow night. I've got the Geo Profiler coming in for that. Obviously, it is very difficult without Steve Cohen. There's, like I've said this before, hundreds of people that do put a show like this together at the CNNs of the world, MS Now's, Fox News's of the world. But we're four. Three now, and thinking of Steve tonight. Love you, brother, and he'll get through this because we are a family here at STS. On the way out, if you don't mind, hit that like and subscribe button. Love you, America. Love you, Tucson. Love you, Vegas. Bring Nancy home. There she is. Bring her home. And I'll say, go Blue and go Huskies. May the best team win. Game time is like 19 minutes. I got to let these guys go, but
let's love go. You all. Go Blue.
We'll see you on the flip side, everybody.